Chapter 15. His ear. He thought with alarm, colon, I must have made that noise myself. And at the same instant the woman left the door, stepped firmly across the floor before him, and sat down in a chair. He knew that step. There was no doubt about it. She had come back. And he very nearly said aloud, of course. Such was his sudden and masterful perception of the indestructible character of her being. Nothing could destroy her, and nothing but his own destruction could keep her away. She was the incarnation of all the short moments which every man spares out of his life for dreams, for precious dreams that concrete the most cherished, the most profitable of his illusions. He peered at her with inward trepidation. She was mysterious, significant, full of obscure meaning like a symbol. He peered, bending forward, as though he had been discovering about her things he had never seen before. Unconsciously he made a step towards her, then another. He saw her arm make an ample, decided movement and he stopped. As he had lifted her veil, it was like the lifting of a visor. The spell was broken. He experienced a shock, as though he had been called out of a trance by the sudden noise of an explosion. It was even more startling and more distinct. It was an infinitely more intimate change, for he had the sensation of having come into this room, only that very moment, of having returned from very far. He was made aware that some essential part of himself had in a flash returned into his body, returned finally from a fierce and lamentable region, from the dwelling place of unveiled hearts. He woke up to an amazing infinity of contempt, to a droll bitterness of wonder, to a disenchanted conviction of safety. He had a glimpse of the irresistible force, and he saw also the barrenness of his convictions of her convictions. It seemed to him that he could never make a mistake, as long as he lived. It was morally impossible to go wrong. He was not elated by that certitude. He was dimly uneasy about its price. There was a chill, as of death, in this triumph of sound principles, in this victory snatched under the very shadow of disaster. The last trace of his previous state of mind vanished, as the instantaneous and elusive trail of a bursting meteor vanishes on the profound blackness of the sky. It was the faint flicker of a painful thought, gone as soon as perceived, that nothing but her presence after all had the power to recall him to himself. He stared at her. She sat with her hands on her lap, looking down, and he noticed that her boots were dirty, her skirts wet and splashed, as though she had been driven back there by a blind fear through a waste of mud. He was indignant, amazed and shocked, but in a natural, healthy way now, so that he could control those unprofitable sentiments by the dictates of cautious self-restraint. The light in the room had no unusual brilliance now. It was a good light in which he could easily observe the expression of her face. It was that of dull fatigue. And the silence that surrounded them was the normal silence of any quiet house, hardly disturbed by the faint noises of a respectable quarter of the town. He was very cool, and it was quite coolly that he thought how much better it would be if neither of them ever spoke again. She sat with closed lips, with an air of lassitude and the stony forgetfulness of her pose, but after a moment she lifted her drooping eyelids and met his tense and inquisitive stare by a look that had all the formless eloquence of a cry. It penetrated, it stirred without informing, it was the very essence of anguish stripped of words that can be smiled at, argued away, shouted down, disdained. It was anguish naked and unashamed, the bare pain of existence let loose upon the world in the fleeting unreserve of a look that had in it an immensity of fatigue, the scornful sincerity, the black impudence of an extorted confession. Alvin Hervey was seized with wonder, as though he had seen something inconceivable, and some obscure part of his being was ready to exclaim with him, colon, I would never have believed it, but an instantaneous revulsion of wounded susceptibilities checked the unfinished thought. He felt full of rancorous indignation against the woman who could look like this at one. This look probed him, it tampered with him. It was dangerous to one, as would be a hint of unbelief whispered by a priest in the august decorum of a temple, and at the same time it was impure, it was disturbing, like a cynical consolation muttered in the dark, tainting the sorrow, corroding the thought, poisoning the heart. He wanted to ask her furiously, "Colon, who do you take me for? How dare you look at me like this?" He felt himself helpless before the hidden meaning of that look. He resented it with pain and futile violence as an injury so secret that it could never, never be redressed. His wish was to crush her by a single sentence. He was stainless. Opinion was on his side. Morality, men, and gods were on his side. Law, conscience, all the world. As he had nothing but that look. And he could only say, "How long do you intend to stay here?" Her eyes did not waver, her lips remained closed, and for any effect of his words he might have spoken to a dead woman, only that this one breathed quickly. He was profoundly disappointed by what he had said. It was a great deception, something in the nature of treason. He had deceived himself. It should have been altogether different, other words, another sensation. And before his eyes, so fixed that at times they saw nothing, she sat apparently as unconscious as though as he had been alone, sending that look of brazen confession straight at him with an air of staring into empty space. He said significantly, "Must I go then?" And he knew he meant nothing of what he implied. One of her hands on her lap moved slightly, as though his words had fallen there, and as he had thrown them off on the floor. But her silence encouraged him. Possibly it meant remorse, perhaps fear. Was she thunderstruck by his attitude? Her eyelids dropped. He seemed to understand ever so much everything. Very well, but she must be made to suffer. It was due to him. He understood everything, yet he judged it indispensable to say with an obvious affectation of civility, "I don't understand, be so good as to..." She stood up. For a second he believed she intended to go away, and it was as though someone had jerked a string attached to his heart. It hurt. He remained open-mouthed and silent. But she made an irresolute step towards him, and instinctively he moved aside. They stood before one another, and the fragments of the torn letter lay between them at their feet like an insurmountable obstacle, like a sign of eternal separation. Around them three other couples stood still, and face to face, as if waiting for a signal, to begin some action, a struggle, a dispute, or a dance. She said, "Colon, don't, Alvin." And there was something that resembled a warning in the pain of her tone. He narrowed his eyes, as if trying to pierce her with his gaze. Her voice touched him. He had aspirations after magnanimity, generosity, superiority, interrupted, however, by flashes of indignation and anxiety, frightful anxiety to know how far as he had gone. She looked down at the torn paper. Then she looked up, and their eyes met again, remained fastened together, like an unbreakable bond, like a clasp of eternal complicity. And the decorous silence, the pervading quietude of the house which enveloped this meeting of their glances, became for a moment inexpressibly vile, for he was afraid she would say too much and make magnanimity impossible, while behind the profound mournfulness of her face there was a regret of things done, the regret of delay, the thought that if as he had only turned back a week sooner, a day sooner, only an hour sooner. They were afraid to hear again the sound of their voices. They did not know what they might say, perhaps something that could not be recalled. And words are more terrible than facts. But the tricky fatality that lurks in obscure impulses spoke through Alvin Hervey's lips suddenly. And he heard his own voice with the excited and skeptical curiosity with which one listens to actors' voices speaking on the stage in the strain of a poignant situation. "If you have forgotten anything..." Her eyes blazed at him for an instant. Her lips trembled, and then she also became the mouthpiece of the mysterious force forever hovering near us. Of that perverse inspiration, wandering, capricious and uncontrollable, like a gust of wind. "What is the good of this, Alvin? dot dot dot, you know why I came back. Dot dot dot, you know that I could not dot dot, he interrupted her with irritation. Then, what's this? He asked, pointing downwards at the torn letter. That's a mistake, she said hurriedly, in a muffled voice. This answer amazed him. He remained speechless, staring at her. He had half a mind to burst into a laugh. It ended in a smile as involuntary as a grimace of pain. A mistake. Dottie began, slowly, and then found himself unable to say another word. Yes. Dot dot, it was honest, she said very low, as if speaking to the memory of a feeling in a remote past. He exploded. Curse your honesty. Dot dot dot, is there any honesty in all this? Dot dot dot, when did you begin to be honest? Why are you here? What are you now? Dot dot dot, still honest? Dot dot, he walked at her, raging, as if blind. During these three quick strides he lost touch of the material world, and was whirled interminably through a kind of empty universe made up of nothing but fury and anguish, till he came suddenly upon her face very close to his. He stopped short, and all at once seemed to remember something heard ages ago. You don't know the meaning of the word, he shouted. She did not flinch. He perceived with fear that everything around him was still. She did not move a hair's breadth, his own body did not stir. An imperturbable calm enveloped their two motionless figures, the house, the town, all the world and the trifling tempest of his feelings. The violence of the short tumult within him had been such as could well have shattered all creation, and yet nothing was changed. He faced his wife in the familiar room in his own house. It had not fallen. And right and left all the innumerable dwellings, standing shoulder to shoulder, had resisted the shock of his passion, had presented, unmoved, to the loneliness of his trouble, the grim silence of walls, the impenetrable and polished discretion of closed doors and curtained windows. Immobility and silence pressed on him, assailed him, like two accomplices of the immovable and mute woman before his eyes. He was suddenly vanquished. He was shown his impotence. He was soothed by the breath of a corrupt resignation coming to him through the subtle irony of the surrounding peace. He said with villainous composure, at any rate it isn't enough for me. I want to know more, if you're going to stay. There is nothing more to tell, she answered, sadly. It struck him as so very true, that he did not say anything. She went on. You wouldn't understand. Dot dot, no? He said, quietly. He held himself tight not to burst into howls and imprecations. I tried to be faithful. Dot, she began again. And this, he exclaimed, pointing at the fragments of her letter. This is a failure, she said. I should think so, he muttered, bitterly. I tried to be faithful to myself, Alvin, and... Dot dot, and honest to you. Dot dot, if you had tried to be faithful to me, it would have been more to the purpose, he interrupted, angrily. I've been faithful to you, and you have spoiled my life, both our lives. Dot, then after a pause the unconquerable preoccupation of self came out, and he raised his voice to ask resentfully, and, pray, for how long have you been making a fool of me? She seemed horribly shocked by that question. He did not wait for an answer, but went on moving about all the time, now and then coming up to her, then wandering off restlessly to the other end of the room. I want to know. Everybody knows, I suppose, but myself, and that's your honesty. I have told you there is nothing to know, she said, speaking unsteadily as if in pain. And nothing of what you suppose. You don't understand me. This letter is the beginning and the end. The end, this thing has no end, he clamored, unexpectedly. See, can't you understand that? I can. Dot dot, the beginning dot dot, he stopped, and looked into her eyes with concentrated intensity, with a desire to see, to penetrate, to understand, that made him positively hold his breath till he gasped. By heavens! He said, standing perfectly still in a peering attitude, and within less than a foot from her. By heavens, he repeated, slowly, and in a tone whose involuntary strangeness was a complete mystery to himself. Be by heavens, I could believe you, I could believe anything now. He turned short on his heel, and began to walk up and down the room with an air of having disburdened himself of the final pronouncement of his life, of having said something on which he would not go back, even if he could. She remained as if rooted to the carpet. Her eyes followed the restless movements of the man, who avoided looking at her. Her white stare clung to him, inquiring, wondering, and doubtful. But the fellow was forever sticking in here, he burst out, distractedly. He made love to you, I suppose, and. Dottie lowered his voice. And you let him. And I let him, she murmured, catching his intonation, so that her voice sounded unconscious, sounded far off and slavish, like an echo. He said twice, you, violently, then calmed down. What could you see in the fellow, he asked, with unaffected wonder. An effeminate, fat ass. What could you? Weren't you happy? Didn't you have all you wanted? Now frankly, did I deceive your expectations in any way? Were you disappointed with our position, or with our prospects perhaps? You know you couldn't be, they are much better than you could hope for when you married me. He forgot himself so far as to gesticulate a little while he went on with animation. What could you expect from such a fellow? He's an outsider, a rank outsider. If it hadn't been for my money, do you hear? For my money, he wouldn't know where to turn. His people won't have anything to do with him. The fellow's no class at all. He's useful, certainly, that's why I thought you had enough intelligence to see it. No. It's incredible. What did he tell you? Do you care for no one's opinion? Is there no restraining influence in the world for you women? Did you ever give me a thought? I tried to be a good husband. Did I fail? Tell me, what have I done? Carried away by his feelings, he took his head in both his hands and repeated wildly, what have I done? Tell me. What? Nothing, she said. Ah. You see. You can't. He began, triumphantly, walking. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.